Chapter 23. Sinking Ship Kurth.
"We promised King Brunner that we'd open those portals," Lord Paris said when he was alone with Gromf and the giant Cecilia soon after. Matron Jindia and her entourage had already departed through underdark routes to the south, where the press on Gontalgrim continued. "It would seem that he doubly needs us to fulfill that promise now." Gromf lowered his gaze and softly chuckled.
The two naked women who appeared at Matron Jindia's side were not drow, and not mortal, he said, looking back up and alternating his gaze between the Netherese lord and the cloud giant. Probably not even women, as I doubt that gender terms apply to such creatures.
Lord Paris gave a slight shudder at that. No doubt the sight of the beautiful creatures had stirred him a bit, Gromf thought, while Cecilia just crinkled her thick-featured face in disgust.
"They were Yawklals, handmaidens of Loth herself," the Archmage explained. "Beings of great power, greater still because they act as the voice of the Spider Queen goddess when they are among my people. It was not Matron Jindi."
"This is the first time I have heard you refer to her by her title when not in her presence," Cecilia interrupted, and the importance of that point had Gromf nodding his agreement as he continued. "Matron Jindia is not the one who ordered me to keep the portals closed, not truly. If there were Yawklos beside her, then we know how she discerned our work here, its relationship to the primordial, and so its potential for the battlefield at Gontalgrim. And she knew exactly what to do about it."
"So we take the side of those who would bring chaos to the north?" Cecilia asked, seeming quite unhappy with that notion.
"We take no sides."
"Is not our inaction a form of alliance?" Lord Paris reasoned.
"It is self-preservation," Gromf corrected. "It is our statement that the work of the Host Tower of the Arcane is paramount in our thoughts. Is that not why we are all here? Why do we care whether it is King Brunner or Matron Jindia or no one at all on the throne of Gontalgrim?"
"King Brunner serves as a great barrier between Luskan and Waterdeep," Cecilia argued. "Will the lords of Waterdeep remain impassive toward Luskan and her drow leaders without that barrier in place?"
"Again, why would we care? Let the lords of Waterdeep sail to Luskan Harbor and lay waste to whoever might be then claiming lordship over the city. The Host Tower stands apart, powerfully defended and without political aspirations."
"And with the Archmage of Menzo Berenzon serving as its Archmage," said Lord Paris.
"Former," Gromf corrected. "And since you seem to have not noticed, I am the only Dark Elf in residence here, and in alliance with many who are favored by the Lords of Waterdeep. Again, let the political warfare and nonsense play as they will."
"Matron Jindia will have Luskan," Paris said.
"And likely Gontalgrim," added Cecilia.
Gromf shrugged as if he hardly cared.
"Perhaps. But never underestimate Jarlaxle. And doubt not that he too will fall into alliance with Matron Jindia if he sees that as his best play. Ever has that one found his way to his most comfortable position. Perhaps Clan Battlehammer will be routed from their new home, but not without a terrific defense, I am sure, one that will leave the invading forces greatly diminished, and one that may well turn the eyes of Waterdeep upon the demonic army that leads the assault. Would you like us caught up in that greater war as well, should it come to be?"
The Netherese man and the giant woman looked at each other, seeming at a loss. "It pains me to fail King Brunner and those who have been great friends to the Host Tower," Lord Paris admitted.
"Me as well," said Cecilia, "though I doubt one would ever expect to hear such things from me regarding a dwarf of all people."
"The gates remain inoperable," Gromf stated.
"For now?" Lord Paris asked more than demanded.
Gromf considered it for a moment, then offered a conciliatory nod. Who knew, after all, where the winds of war might blow?
Stay close and we'll get you through, Wulfgar whispered to Bonnie Charlie.
They had set the boat ashore on the island, not far from the host tower of the Arcane, to find the field scarred and littered with the remains of the invaders, both the corpses of mortal beings and the smoking husks of demonic things sent back to the lower plains.
Go and hide, human, Kimoriel told her. If we are set upon by enemies, you will be the first to die.
Do not listen to the blabbering fool, Wulfgar immediately added. Stay close. You pulled me from the cold waves. I'm not about to forget that.
As he finished, the pain in his back became suddenly acute, nearly dropping him to his knees. He looked to Kimoriel, who merely shrugged, and the pain diminished. The lesson was clear. Kimoriel scoffed and walked away, the other two close behind. They moved onto the bridge to Close Guard Island, a stepping stone to the mainland. As they came over the high point of the structure, they saw that a battle continued on Close Guard before the only grand house on the island.
House Kurth is besieged, said Bonnie Charlie.
Kimoriel moved to Wulfgar.
Run off, woman, he told Bonnie Charlie, and he reached for the barbarian.
Wulfgar stepped back from his touch and stubbornly shook his head.
She comes with us.
Kimoriel paused and just stared.
Her too, Wulfgar restated.
Then it was the psionicist who shook his head.
I have been asked by Jarlaxle to offer protection to you. He said nothing about vagabond Flotsam.
Flotsam, am I? Said Bonnie Charlie.
Jetsam, then, it matters not, Kimoriel said, and waved at her dismissively. He held his hand out to Wulfgar once more.
You would leave her here. How will she cross that bridge full of invaders to get to the mainland?
The host tower is right over there, Kimoriel indicated, pointing back behind Wulfgar to the massive tree-like structure. She should go and beg Gromp for help, or back to the boat and let her row to a safe landing. I am not here to play nursemaid to wayward pirates. He held out his hand to Wulfgar once more. Come, let us go and see what High Captain Kurth can tell us. But Wulfgar stepped back and resolutely shook his head.
I'll not leave her.
Then I'll leave you.
As you will, the barbarian said.
You understand what that will mean for you?
I do.
With a shrug, Kimoriel closed his eyes and became something less than substantial, his ghostly form drifting the remaining length of the bridge to Close Guard Island, then moving, unnoticed by those outside the great house, right through the wall of Ship Kurth.
Idiot, Bonnie Charlie muttered.
He is many things. But I wouldn't name that among them, said Wulfgar, his teeth gritting, for the pain in his back had already returned.
Not him, yourself.
Wulfgar looked at her curiously.
He had your way out of the fight and into Ship Kurth, and there's no better place to be save the host tower itself in such a war as has come to Luskin, the woman explained. You don't even know me.
I'm not about to desert you here. You pulled me from the cold water. I'll not forget.
Was the drow that made me do it. And don't doubt that I believe in yourself here if that skinny one had given me the same choice.
Wulfgar paused and stared hard at the woman.
Where will you go? He asked.
Bah. But where will we go? She corrected, drawing a long knife from her belt. Think we can get into that Ship Kurth there? I'd like to give that skinny drow a few wads of spit.
She started past Wulfgar, moving along the bridge with determined strides. The fighting continued on Close Guard Island, all along the street before the grand facade of the large structure known as Ship Kurth. Wulfgar caught up to the woman before she made the end of the bridge and pulled her off to the side to cover behind a wagon. A hulking gnoll spotted them, though. The large creature, half human and half canine, reared up tall on its legs and howled, then charged at the pair. Two strides later, it was dead, a flying warhammer caving in its chest. Several other gnolls had watched, Wulfgar noticed, but none approached, and all went back to the fight on the street.
Brave beasties, eh? Bonnie Charlie remarked.
Vicious, yes, Wulfgar replied. I've not much experience with them, but they fight like hyenas, I am told.
Hyenas?
Dog-like, the barbarian explained. Pack hunters of the desert, powerful and vicious, but too cunning to get caught in a fight they would likely lose.
When we go near that door, they'll swarm then, for sure, said Bonnie Charlie.
And I'm not even sure that door will open for us, Wulfgar added.
Well then, back to the boat. Bonnie Charlie stood and started for the bridge, but Wulfgar caught her by the arm and pulled her back beside him.
Just watch a bit, he told her. There is more to Ship Kurth than you might believe.
It is the High Captain's house, the woman answered. Beniago Kurth is the leader of Luskin, what more?
Beniago works for the leader, Wulfgar corrected, and he gave Bonnie Charlie a skeptical look. For how could she not know the worst-kept secret in all of Luskin? So does Camuriel, and that leader brings more to a fight than any High Captain could ever imagine.
Before them along the road, flaming bottles sailed at House Kurth, striking the walls and spilling oil that caught the siding and began to burn. A responding barrage of arrows and even a few lightning bolts set many gnolls running and several others spinning down, yelping, to the street. But there was little doubt that the gnolls had gained mightily in that last exchange.
So it would seem, the woman said sarcastically.
Her words were cut short by a jolt of thunder, a sudden and powerful flash behind them, back on or above the outer island. They turned, as did the gnolls, to see a black and roiling storm cloud over the host tower of the Arcane.
Well now, said Bonnie Charlie as that cloud began to speed their way.
Did I mention that the true leader of Luskin is also a friend to the Archmage of the Host Tower?
Might that ye should have, said the woman, and she dove under the wagon as the great darkness suddenly loomed above, lightning crackling in the clouds. A bolt snapped down, shattering a pile of crates to reveal a group of hiding gnolls. The archers from House Kurth made short work of them. The wind mounted, the flames swirling about the sides of the building, seemingly making it worse. But then came the cloudburst, a sudden and torrential downpour.
Now, said Wulfgar, grabbing Bonnie Charlie's arm and tugging her out from behind the wagon, the two quickly in a dead run for House Kurth, Wulfgar groaning and lurching with every stride. Wulfgar of Gontalgrim, the big man yelled, waving his arms and hoping the archers would hear him well enough through the furious wind to not cut him down in the street. More than his words, though, his actions saved him, for when some gnolls yelped and yipped at him from across the way, several leaping up from behind a natural berm and lifting spears, Wulfgar yelled out, Tempest, at the top of his lungs, and sent Aegis Fang flying their way. How those gnolls barked and scattered, not fast enough for one, though, who got hit on the side of the hip and thrown into the air, twisting before landing, broken. Back at House Kurth, archers rushed onto the balcony, shooting wildly, for what might they hit in winds suddenly so strong that they could hardly stand?
Wulfgar of Gontalgrim, the big man shouted again.
The archers on the balcony began cheering for him, urging him and Bonnie Charlie on. The two made the door easily, no pursuit coming from across the road, to be met by Kurth's soldiers ushering them in. They entered the foyer, dripping rain, fully soaked.
I'm glad you heard me, Wulfgar said.
Heard? The nearest soldier asked. We were looking for you. Lord Beniago told us of your approach. Wulfgar started to respond, but just sighed and let it go.
Maybe the skinny one's not as bad as I thought, Bonnie Charlie quietly admitted.
The two were escorted to the private chambers of Lord Beniago soon after, and given blankets to put on so they might get out of their drenched clothing. Beniago came around his grand desk and half sat, half leaned upon it. Leave us, he told his soldiers, who quickly obeyed, one dropping Wulfgar's wolfskin shawl and the other clothing to the floor beside the door. No sooner had the soldiers shut the door than Camuriel walked out of the shadows to the side of the room, and it was clear to Wulfgar that more than shadows had been concealing the mind wizard. Almost immediately, the pain in Wolfgar's back subsided. It would have been so much easier if you had just come in with me, the drow said.
and Bonnie Charlie would be dead, Wulfgar answered, or running for her life.
Kimoriel shrugged. No small amount of coin convinced the cloud giant Cecilia to provide the storm, he said. Coin you will repay.
Coin from the coffers of Ship Kurth, Beniago reminded him.
Out of the corner of his eye, showing his displeasure, Kimoriel noted the man, a tall and lanky red-haired human, in appearance at least.
King Brunner will happily repay Ship Kurth, Wulfgar said, looking straight at Beniago.
He knew the truth of the man, of course, that this was no human at all, but another drow of Brakendy Earth, who had been magically disguised to serve as puppet leader of Luskin for Jarlaxle.
Should I have him deliver it to Ship Kurth or Illusk?
Illusk, Bonnie Charlie asked under her breath, and wisely so, for Wulfgar had just revealed quite a bit.
Ship Kurth will soon enough be no more, it would appear, Beniago replied. Not so, you're winning well in the streets, and the second island is cleared of enemies.
The city is full of attackers, and with power behind them you cannot comprehend, said Kimoriel.
We are putting up a good fight, but it is all for show, Beniago admitted. We cannot hold and have no intention of trying. The way to refuge is already cleared and waiting.
He looked right at Bonnie Charlie as he spoke, and in a way that set the hairs on the back of Wolfgar's neck standing up. I told you not to bring her in here, Kimoriel said. Now she knows.
Knows what?
Bonnie Charlie asked innocently.
Does it matter?
Asked Wulfgar. Yes, both Kimoriel and Beniago answered together. Wulfgar looked over to see Bonnie Charlie nervously licking her lips and glancing up at him. She now had no weapons on her, just a blanket wrapped around her shivering form. She probably thought that a bad thing, but given the two standing against her, Wulfgar figured that her inability to do something rash and threatening might just save her life.
She's with me, under my protection, he said.
What followed was the closest thing to a laugh Wulfgar had ever heard from Kimoriel. Wulfgar focused on Beniago, who, despite the clandestine nature of his rule and identity, had been doing some important and good work for the citizens of Luskin. He saw no compassion there, however.
I am the son of the King of Gontalgrim, Wulfgar declared.
You are not in line to the throne of Gontalgrim, Beniago corrected.
I don't have to be, the big man retorted. Brunner is my friend, as is Drizzt. When I say that Bonnie Charlie is under my protection, I speak for them as well.
That hardly matters, said Beniago. King Brunner knows that some things must be kept secret at all costs.
Give me a sword and fight me fair then, Bonnie Charlie snarled at him.
Your gear is right there by the door, said Kimoriel.
Do not, Wulfgar told her, but she growled and went for the items, defiantly shrugging off the blanket and pulling on her shirt and pants, then taking up her knife and spinning about.
Beniago was still half sitting on the desk, Kimoriel standing impassively beside it.
I ask again, Wulfgar pleaded to them. None of this is her fault.
You were warned, Beniago said. Aegis Fang appeared in Wolfgar's hand. Beniago started at that, but quickly relaxed and nodded his chin to the side. Carefully, Wulfgar turned to see Bonnie Charlie with her knife reversed, its tip pressed in against the front of her throat. Sweat surely mixed with the raindrops falling from the woman's unkempt hair. Her hand trembled as if she was trying to fight the press, or, Wulfgar knew, as if she was trying to fight the possession in her mind, the quiet voice telling her to kill herself. Wulfgar dropped Aegis Fang to the floor. You can call it back with a word, Beniago said.
I won't, the big man promised. Bonnie Charlie is under my protection and that of Gontalgrim.
Beniago sighed. Over to the side, the woman gave a little squeak, and a bit of blood started to show.
When this is over, Gontalgrim will rebuild Joanne's heirloom, Wulfgar blurted. King Brunner will spare no expense, for I, his son, will be among that crew. She'll be the finest, fastest, and meanest ship on the Sword Coast, and with a crew bolstered by battle ragers, and maybe even with Drizzt himself.
Impressive,
said Beniago, who seemed not impressed.
Bonny Charlie will captain that ship, Wolfgar finished.
Sailing in support of Ship Kurth, I suppose, said Beniago. Wolfgar shook his head.
No, but neither sailing against the interests of Ship Kurth. Let her go. It is in your interests. She will become a major power about the seas, and one whose ship will never be hostile to you.
Beniago looked to Camoriel. Do you think she understands? Camoriel gave that curious, almost laugh again. She understands more than she ever wanted to understand, he replied, calm and superior. It is quite disconcerting, perhaps even mind-breaking, to so quickly learn that your own body can be turned fully against you to cause great harm. The psionicist waved his hand, and Bonnie Charlie suddenly slumped forward, released from the possession, her dagger hand dropping to her side. She gave a few gasps and was fighting hard. Wolfgar could see to not let them see her cry. He understood. Could anything be more invasive and traumatizing than having your body stolen from your control and turned back on you? He shook his head. He could only imagine her torment. One day he would pay back Camoriel O'Blotra, he thought. Quite unlikely, Camoriel answered aloud, staring straight at him. Beniago hopped up from the desk.
Go dry your clothes and rest, he told the two humans. We may be leaving soon, perhaps at any time. When we go, you can follow. Both of us, Wolfgar stated, and Beniago nodded his agreement.
But when the time to leave is upon us, we will go, and if you are not prepared for that journey, you will be left behind. Cecilia rode her black cloud back to the host tower to find Gromph waiting for her just outside her private chambers. A horde approaches, she informed him. Your friends at Ship Kurth will be overrun.
Of course, the Archmage agreed. Three of the city's high captains joined with the invaders even before they arrived. The flotilla that came against Luskin was larger after the sea encounter than the original force sailing to attack us.
Cecilia wore a confused look.
They are scoundrels, Gromph explained. The attackers offered them a better position, no doubt.
Or perhaps they were not overly thrilled with being ruled by dark elves.
There is that, Gromph admitted. I tell you without bias that the city was thriving under Jarlaxle's quiet rule. But sometimes that is not enough. And not all of the captains were doing well, of course, since High Captain Kurth has greatly curtailed their piracy.
Because they could earn more simply through the open trade avenues, if I understand correctly.
Sometimes that is not enough, repeated Gromph.
Shall I make a new storm to bite at those advancing on Ship Kurth?
Gromph paused, then shook his head.
I do not know how far they will go. If we interfere too overtly, perhaps they will come against us once more.
The field about our tower is littered with their dead.
But they know that wizards tire. No, let the city sort out around us, however it may fall.
And your friend in Ship Kurth?
Any who should concern us are in no danger, the Archmage assured her.
Cecilia gave a little snort, but tried to cover it when she saw the scowl on Gromp's face and realized he knew she was mocking him.
Such a drow thing to say, she admitted. If all of Luskin, other than those you deem valuable to you, were to be slaughtered, would you even care, Archmage?
Should I?
Cecilia blew a long sigh and let it go. Curiously, though, as she walked through the door leading to her extra-dimensional mansion, she realized that she actually didn't believe Gromph. Had he been so battered by the distorted culture of Menzo Berenzon that he thought it a sign of great weakness to admit compassion? How many others, the cloud giantess wondered. How many other dark elves had been similarly broken?
Been an interesting day, Wolfgar said to Bonnie Charlie when they were left alone in a sitting room at Ship Kurth.
They sat across from each other at a small table, still wrapped in their blankets as their clothes dried by the flaming hearth.
"Aye, that's a word," the woman replied. "Might be others I'd use, but interesting works."
"Calico Grim?" Wolfgar asked as he replayed the last few frantic hours. "How'd he go?"
Bonnie Charlie shook her head. "The red elf with the sword got him, cut him in half."
"You'd been with him long?"
"Long enough to know enough about him to hold back me tears, I."
Wolfgar took a while to digest that.
"And what now for you?"
"I'll tell ye when I find that I have some say in that," she replied, then added with obvious intrigue,
"Did ye mean what ye said?"
"What I said?"
"The heirloom?"
"Ah, well."
"Might not even be destroyed," Bonnie Charlie said. "When ye broke their ship, they took ours, they hadn't any other. She's in Luskin Harbor right now, not to doubt."
"Then we might take her back."
"And I'll be captain, and yourself'll sign on for the fight?"
Wolfgar shrugged.
"I never know where my road will take me any more, lady, Captain Charlie. Or would it be Captain Bonnie?"
Bonnie Charlie grinned and shrugged.
"I did mean it about the ship," Wolfgar added. "When this is sorted, I expect you'd make a fine captain and a worthy ally, and yes, I would hope to sail with you sometimes at least."
That brought a smile to the beleaguered woman's face.
"We should get some rest," Wolfgar offered, motioning to the pillows that had been spread on the floor before the hearth.
"Aye," the woman agreed, and she quickly added, "Rest." Before either of them even got out of a chair, the door opened and a tall drow woman entered.
"Time to go," she told them.
Heeding the warning of Beniago, Bonnie Charlie rushed to grab her clothes, Wolfgar stiffly following. The big man froze when he felt the drow woman's hand on his back, and before he could ask her intent, he felt the warmth of magical healing flowing through him.
"Be quick," she said. "You'll find more healing when we're safely away from here."
They went out into the hall and joined a procession of fast-fleeing others, and back behind them, in the direction of the street, they heard the slamming of a ram on the front door and the crackling as flames again bit at Shipcurse walls. Through a secret door in the wall they went and down a long spiral staircase into a wet and dark, very dark, brine-smelling cave.
"Close it for good," Beniago yelled out from some corner of the cave, and behind and far above, they heard the thump of a huge stone, the ground jolting beneath their feet.
The secret door was no longer a door. Few torches were burning, and those were far apart, another reminder to Wolfgar that Shipcurth's crew were drow who didn't need much light. They moved down a descending corridor and into a tunnel that was quite tight for the hulking barbarian.
"We're under the bay," Bonnie Charlie whispered from behind Wolfgar.
Even as she spoke, the torches were extinguished, and the parade moved in complete darkness, feeling their way in a long single-file line. She was right, and they were crossing to the mainland, he believed. No, not to the mainland, but under the mainland, he soon corrected, when they came into a wider area lit by magical fairy fire. An area of worked rooms and corridors, fine masonry covered in old sculptures and decorations. Bonnie Charlie gasped and nearly leaped upon Wolfgar, for more than two-thirds of the people who had come with her had shed their human disguises. Beniago, still a red-haired human in appearance, moved over to the pair.
"Illusk," he explained. "The haunted city beneath Luskin. Old Luskin, if you will." "Haunted by drow?" Wolfgar asked.
"By more than us, though the spirits here seem content to leave us alone."
"The true power of Luskin, then, Bregendierth's secret home."
"One of them. And now you know," said Beniago.
He looked directly at Bonnie Charlie, a very clear threat as he added,
"You both know."
"And so we're sworn to secrecy," she said.
"Need I even warn you of the consequences again?" "Was the worst-kept secret in Luskin afore," the woman replied, regaining some swagger, apparently. And that impressed Wolfgar more than a little, given that they were wholly helpless here if the drow decided to be rid of them. Who would even know?
but still a secret, and one we prefer to keep, said Beniago.
Kimoriel walked over then and stared hard at Bonnie Charlie.
Will you tell? Beniago asked the woman, and before she could answer, she gasped.
Wulfgar looked from her to Kimoriel to see his concentration. He was in her thoughts again, the big man knew, listening to her unspoken response, her honest response, before she could properly filter it.
A pity, Kimoriel said, and walked away.
What does that mean? Asked Wulfgar, thinking his friend doomed.
It means he doesn't get to kill her, I suppose, said Beniago. He dipped an unexpected bow to the woman.
Welcome to Illusk, Bonnie Charlie. Perhaps you will indeed one day captain Joanne's heirloom.
The woman seemed completely at a loss, of course, and she looked pleadingly to Wulfgar.
The drow never trust anyone who is not drow, Wulfgar started to explain.
Or anyone who is, Beniago quickly added, and he just shrugged as both looked at him.
Now, Kimoriel is finished with you, and Priestess Dabne is waiting. That wound is abyssal and will fester and perhaps even kill you without her aid.